This is an MP3 audio clip from the weekly People First radio broadcast.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
British Columbia had the highest child poverty rate in Canada for the sixth year in a row in 2007, according to a child poverty report card released this week. The provincial report on child poverty was released along with a national study that marks the 20th anniversary of the Canadian Parliament's unanimous vote to end child poverty by the year 2000. Adrian Montani, provincial coordinator for First Call BC Child and Youth Advocacy Coalition, the organization that issued the provincial report, is on the phone with us from Vancouver. And Jim McGregor, the community school coordinator for Nanaimo District Secondary School, is with us in the studio. Welcome, both of you, to People First Radio.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin.
Now, Adrian Montani, it's been 20 years since the Federal House of Commons committed to ending poverty among Canadian children by the year 2000, yet the country is still far from reaching that goal. What's happened over the past 20 years?
What's happened is that the resolution wasn't honored, basically. We've allowed child poverty to stay pretty much, to fluctuate up and down a bit as the economy gets better or worse. We've put in some programs nationally, like the Canada Child Tax Benefit, that have lifted some children out of poverty. But in the meantime, we've allowed income inequality to continue to grow, and the child poverty rate across Canada, and certainly in BC, has not really come down since that initial, or not significantly come down since that initial promise.
Mm. The First Call report card on child poverty notes that six provincial governments have committed themselves to poverty reduction plans for their own jurisdictions. Has that made a difference?
It is. And some of them are quite new, and we haven't had time yet to track them to see the results. But some of them, like Newfoundland and Labrador and Quebec, we see that they have had much better success. So their poverty rates are coming down. Their child poverty rates are coming down. So while we don't have full studies to say it's because of this or that measure, what they do have are cross-government plans. So there's a variety of measures that they're taking, and we're seeing those numbers come down.
Mm. British Columbia had the highest rate of child poverty across Canada for 6 years running. How does poverty in BC compare with poverty in the rest of the country?
Well, we're the worst in the year we're reporting on, which is 2007, and that was the sixth year in a row that we were both above the national average and the worst in the country. And that's we're at 18.8, or about 19%, using the before tax low income cutoff measure.
If we go beyond statistics, does the experience of poverty amongst the poor in British Columbia differ in any specific or substantial ways from poor people elsewhere in Canada?
I think probably the same range of experiences and reasons that people are living in poverty exist in all provinces. So I think in BC, again, if you in our report card, we report on how many of those low-income families have, or those children are living with parents who are working full-time, full year. And we, again, lead the country in that measure. We're at 56%. So I think you could say that we excel, unfortunately, in low-wage jobs.
The report card shows that welfare incomes have been consistently depressed for the past two decades. Under Social Credit, New Democratic Party, and Liberal governments in British Columbia, what does that tell us about governments and poverty?
Well, this is where the systemic or the structural, this is poverty that's created for families that are unable to find work, or unable, or parents who are unable to work for reasons of health or other the reasons, and have to rely on that social safety net. We're keeping them in abject poverty and making it very hard for them to feed their children. So that, because the welfare rates are so low, below the poverty lines, that these are the families that are way overrepresented in food bank lineups and all the social exclusion that goes with living so far below the poverty line, that your children can't participate in sports programs, their health suffers, housing often inadequate and crowded, or they have to move a lot because they can't afford rent and things like that. So these are the families that are the poorest of the poor. They don't make up the majority of the poor kids in the province, but they certainly represent some of the most the children living in the worst conditions.
You're listening to People First Radio on CHLY.ca. 101.7 FM across the islands. We're talking about child and family poverty as a report card by First Call BC Child and Youth Advocacy Coalition revealed that for 6 years in a row, British Columbia posted the highest child poverty rates in Canada. I'm joined on the phone by Adrian Montani, Provincial Coordinator for the First Call BC Coalition, and in the studio by Jim McGregor, the Community School Coordinator for Nanaimo District Secondary School. Jim McGregor, what have you seen in Nanaimo, and how does the city compare with the rest of British Columbia?
Well, what I know best is South Nanaimo, and specifically my mandate is to operate in the community of Harewood. So using that as a microcosm, what we find is that the poor are largely have do work at least most of the year, and that by all of the measures, Harewood has poverty concentrated. We're particularly with child poverty, we're about double all of the measures of the provincial averages. So we've got some challenges ahead of us, but there's a very strong business case to try to do something about poverty, and through our community school and other programs, we're taking action to address it.
Tell us more about that business case.
Well, by health, education, and housing measures, when you have a large population of people who have to access those services, particularly health services, inordinately because they have poor housing, because they can't afford to buy nutritious food, it tends to destabilize the system. So that should be of interest to all people. Even if you're doing okay, Joe, or doing okay, Jane, you should still be worried if your neighbor is not doing okay. And there are some community local measures that we've put in place since 1995 that are working to address that.
Now, Jim McGregor, you work with the school system. What are some of the impacts of child and family poverty that you see in schools?
Well, by one of the measures for 2007, which is the data that we're working with right now, one in three children or students who walk in the front door of a high school in September walk out before they graduate in grade 12, one in three. So that's for many reasons, but you can be assured that a lot of that has to do with poverty, because we know that when kids and students don't have the basics of life, they tend not to excel academically and tend not to have an interest in studying, despite what we do in the school system to make it otherwise. So in education, that's what we're seeing. Of course, with the important point is that when children need a certain thing like a lunch or physical activity, they need it now. They need it then today. A teacher working in a classroom, there's nobody they're going to call to make that situation otherwise. So the needs are very immediate with children, of course, for their development and the long-term development as well. So that's what we're doing, and I can talk a bit about what we're doing with our community school program that addresses poverty directly.
Adrian Montani, what are some of the other implications of poverty over time?
There are health effects. Lots of research evidence to show that for the longer a child is growing up in poverty, it will potentially have long-term health effects. And so there will be a greater vulnerability to chronic disease, like everything from diabetes and heart disease to higher cancer rates. They actually follow the economic gradient, or, you know, poor people get sick more. And over the life course, even if they become unpoor or do okay as they grow up, those years spent living on a very low income when they were children will affect their long-term health. And, of course, there's also the issue of the social justice system. Jim's just talked about the educational deficits that can occur and the disconnect that can happen for kids who feel they can't keep up or participate fully in school due to their poverty. But certainly, and those who, as teens, become quite alienated or feel excluded socially and are looking for, you know, how can they get income, are vulnerable to being drawn into illegal activities. And so we look at some of the cost to society in the justice system, in the health system, and in the education system overall. So kids suffer when they're not included, and certainly their health suffers in a big way. And there's lots of family stress, too, that I think doesn't get reported, but it's really a big deal for parents who are raising children and have to say no all the time, or have to plead their poverty to, whether it's to schools or to other offices, to try and get fee waivers, or, you know, so their children can participate in recreation, those kinds of things. So children who are excluded from recreation programs, for instance, that's another reason why they might suffer ill health in the long term.
Jim, when we spoke yesterday, you mentioned some solutions, some suggested solutions for reducing the burden of poverty, and you just mentioned a few moments ago some of the things that you're doing within the school system. Can you share some of those things with us?
Sure, Kevin. We're a Harewood family of community schools, so we're four schools that operate within the Harewood community. Our first offering is to people living in Harewood, but everyone is welcome as there is room for that. How we operate is we use what's called ABCD, asset-based community development. All that means is that we find out what the need is in our community, and we work in a very unique way in that we go within our community to find people who can fill that need. So whether they can teach a yoga class or help out with the school lunch program, run a drop-in basketball program, teach seniors how to use a computer. That's how we do it. And how we operate is that we try to heal our community from the inside out. We tend to try not to look outside for solutions or fixing. We look to our own resources. And Adrian talked about the social exclusion. That's a very important part of what we do. And just as a measure, last year, amongst our four schools, we had 80,000 people through our doors. That's 220 people a day who are taking part in programs and services that help them get along a little bit better because they were low income.
Adrian, the report card calls on the British Columbia government to accept firm targets and timelines for the reduction of child and family poverty. What else needs to happen?
Well, within, if they would accept, commit to having a provincial poverty reduction plan with some measurable targets and timelines that we can hold them and ourselves accountable to. Within that plan, some of our suggestions are things like raising the minimum wage up to, we were suggesting $10.80 an hour. That would bring an individual working full-time, full year up to the poverty line, but it certainly wouldn't support a family. So we're also suggesting that they look at their own role in making sure people are paid a living wage. That's a broader thing than government can do alone. Of course, there's a whole private sector, and we have a living wage campaign. We're trying to encourage employers of all types to look at, are they paying a wage that allows people to raise children in a healthy fashion? We'd like to see welfare rates go up for those who are on income assistance so that they're not in such abject need. We'd like to see big investments in quality, accessible child care for all families as an entitlement for children, and we'd like to get started on that. That's a big investment, but we think it needs to be started on now. We'd like to see bigger investments in affordable housing, because that's one of the biggest costs for families that keep them their budgets stretched. And we'd like to see the barriers to attending post-secondary school, like high tuition fees and no student grants and the huge student debts that people are taking on right at the beginning of their careers and their family lives. We'd like to see those barriers brought down. So we'd like to see some tuition decreases and some student grants for post-secondary school. Those are just some of them. We have some federal recommendations as well, but those are the particular ones for the provincial government.
We have just a moment left. I'm wondering if there's anything else you'd like to add to our conversation today, Jim McGregor.
Looking at local solutions here in School District 68 recently, there's something that we could do to really address the roots of poverty and employment. There used to be career centers within each secondary school. About 3 years ago, those closed due to funding. If we could restart those career centers and give kids a good start in their work life, and also have it open so that their parents can attend, and also that they could take adult basic education courses, I think we'd go a long ways in using our educational system to get at the roots of poverty and overcome some of that social exclusion and education exclusion that comes with it. Mm-hmm. There are many more. Maybe we could talk about them in a later show.
I hope so. And in fact, Jim, it'd be wonderful to invite you back again to speak in more detail about what is being done in the educational system about these and other problems and challenges. Adrienne Montani.
I think what I'd like to just remind people is that the data we're discussing in these very high poverty rates in BC are from 2007. We all know that the recession hit in 2008, and so those numbers are much higher now, we're sure. We just don't have the data yet, but we know that income assistance caseloads and people on employment insurance, all those numbers are dramatically up. So our message to the provincial government in particular at this time, but also the federal government, is that this is a time when, in a recession, when we really need to invest in we've already allowed income inequality to grow. We need to look at those who are not keeping up, even in the good times, and make sure that we don't make their situation worse now that the economy is faltering. So we don't want to see cuts in social services, in the education system, and other places now when the economy is faltering and families are really suffering. So this is not the time for cuts. This is the time for investments in our children.
Thanks very much for taking the time to talk with us today, Adrienne and Jim. It's very much appreciated.
Thank you very much.
Thank Bye-bye. You, Kevin. And I think what you're doing here with People First Radio is what's needed to work on making our community a better place to live. So thank you.
Right on. Thanks very much, Jim.
Thank you.
Adrienne Montani is the provincial coordinator for First Call BC Child and Youth Advocacy Coalition, and Jim McGregor is the community school coordinator for Nanaimo District Secondary School. You can find the 2009 Child Poverty Report Card produced by First Call BC online at www.firstcallbc.org.
People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Centre Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society's CHLY 101.7 FM, CHLY.ca, community radio from Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of these organizations.